right. Thank you very much, Don. And hi, everybody. I have asked Jacqueline to hang out just a little bit because we're getting a new form. You guys may be aware of that. There was a message that came out, but I don't know that it's been widely announced, so you might also have missed it. So I wanted Jacqueline just to give us a little update on what's going on. So Jacqueline, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Regina. Hey, everybody. We are transitioning to a new forum. We moved from a standalone forum, separate site, basically, to one that lives on our website. It makes it a lot easier for us to administer the forum. We asked you during the last week to be sure and save a copy of your contemplations on your own computer in case we lost some data in the transition. I don't think that we lost anything. I know we also gave you all a message that not to post for a period of time until we got things back up and running. I think we're within a day or two of doing that. Aggie Michkowski has been working very hard as a volunteer to get this done, and I just got a message from her a little while ago going, I think we're good to go. So within the next couple of days, we should be up and running. I will send you guys an email, you know, via MailChimp as daily subscribers. To see that, but let me real quick share my screen. Is that okay, Regina? I can't see you. I covered you up with my share, so I'm hoping you're giving me a thumbs up.
Yes, it is okay.
Good. Let's see, and I'll just let you all see. Here's the new forum. This should look real familiar because here's our, on the side here are our latest posts. I can't tell you how to get into the forum yet. Because there's not really an entry point for you yet. I can't tell you whether you have to register again. I can't tell you whether, I can tell you all your data is there, but we're going to have to work out a little bit of, you know, what you have to do next to be able to post on this forum. And it's not that different from the old one. So let me just, and this is, you're looking at it here, and let me just run down to find it. Should be here somewhere.
It was there earlier.
I know. Well, and Aggie's been working on it. so let me go back up and see what I see. Maybe I'm not logged in yet. As you see, I am learning this myself. So,
there's a login.
See, thank you, Regina. Where's my login?
Just go further to the right from where you are.
No, where it says login?
Yes, that's the place.
And since I'm already an administrator on the site, I had a login and a password, but you guys may have to get one. So there you go. So here's the forum in general. And of course, since I'm super whatever, I get all the privileges and I get to see all these sections, and maybe everybody's not used to seeing all the sections. Here's the general healing group, Regina's group. And you see there's just a few topics. It looks like we're going to have to go over to view all topics to get all of you guys on the page. So let me do that. And scroll down, and here's everybody's journals. Susan's and Andy's and Lene's and Jay's and Abigail's and Lynn's. So let's see, where do we want to go in here? Let's just, let's go into George's. Is that okay with you, George? All right. So to get into George's, oops, I think I picked a particular one. I'm doing this very poorly, and I apologize for that.
Yeah.
So let me go back. Regina, you agreed. I'm doing terrible.
Well, I okay. I agreed. You clicked on the wrong thing.
Okay. So now I clicked on the right thing, George's 7-Step Journal, on the title of that. And as you can see, that is his first post, right? Yes, in July. Okay, and you can click here, and that should take us to George's last post, his latest post, And it does. It takes us down to the very bottom. He's posted 37 of them. Not like we're counting, though, George.
I think it's actually page 37. So multiple.
Oh, my goodness. Posts. Okay. Thank you.
It's hundreds of posts.
Hundreds of posts. I apologize, George. I was shorting you there. And then, you know, so this looks a lot like what we're used to working with. If I wanted to comment on George's post, I would hit reply. And, you know, so I don't think any of that's going to change. Whatever training we need to do. And I think Aggie has already worked up some tips and stuff for us, but I don't have that information yet. So I will stop the share. I just wanted to give you an overview and let you know that it's real similar to what we're used to working with. Thank you, Regina, for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. So again, that new form hopefully will be implemented within a couple of days, but, you know, you never know for sure till something like that is done. You know, as they say, it's not over till the fat lady sings. But when it is ready for us to use it, Jacqueline will send out a message. She'll tell us whatever we need to do, and then we can begin using the form again. So thank you very much, Jacqueline, for hanging around and showing us that, just to let people know what's coming. And you guys can see Jacqueline's new office in her new condo here in La Vida. It's like a little log cabin. I call it her cabin, actually, even though it's a condo, because it looks like a log cabin, as you can see. Yeah. And maybe next week, Ron, we'll give you a tour. You have to get your house cleaned up, Jacqueline. Yeah. All right.
Yes, ma'am. It'd be my pleasure. I look forward to seeing you, Ron, when you get here.
Well, I was joking. Her house might be clean. I don't know. I haven't been over there. I was just teasing.
It's clean. You're going to find out tomorrow because you're coming to visit me tomorrow.
I'm coming tomorrow.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Hi, everyone. Did everybody have a happy Thanksgiving? How many people gained weight? Do you know? Yeah, I think just about everybody gains weight. And I know I showed you my turkey nails. Do you want to see my Christmas nails? Can you see? It's Rudolph. Isn't that cute? The lady who does my nails, I let her do whatever she wants for the holidays. Because, you know, she would have me all fancy all year long when actually I'm a little simpler than her. So during the most of the year, you know, she keeps it nice and simple and conservative. But then once the holidays hit, I let her do whatever she wants to do. So she just has a blast with my nails. And I actually kind of like them too. They're kind of fun, kind of festive. After New Year's, I'll go back to normal, more conservative nails. Does anyone have anything they would like to share first before I jump in with what I've collected for the week? Especially since you guys, I haven't been reading your journals. Maybe you're not even posting. I don't know if you're posting since she asked you not to. Anything that you have that you might want to share from the last week, as you know, I'm really interested to hear. All right, everybody's looking pretty quiet. So what I will do is I will start, but you guys are free to jump in at any time, as you know. You know, maybe my sharing just kind of primes the pump a little bit so that you find that you do have something to share. So the first place I have us going is 949. Can you guys believe it? You're almost to 1,000. 949 says, I am neither the body nor the experiencer of the body. I think what I wanted to do was just kind of look at this together because I think you guys are probably accustomed to seeing teachings that say, I am not the body, right? I mean, when we were in A Course in Miracles, those of us who started there, we had several days of I am not the body. I am still as God created me, something like that, right? I don't remember it exactly, but it was something like that. So we're very used to this I am not the body thought, whether we identify with the body or not, at least we're used to the concept. But there's something else introduced here. It says, I am not the experiencer of the body. And that's one step further from I am not the body. I am not the experiencer of the body. So I am curious to see if you guys have anything you'd like to share from your contemplation of quote 949.
Regina, I did not, during the week, I don't contemplate all four quotes. I usually just pick one, and that's not the one that I picked, but just as you were reading it, I'm trying to go beyond being the experiencer and being aware of the experience that's being had. So it kind of just kind of removes when I am able to do this, kind of just removes that the personality, the person, just for a short period of time, if I can get into zone of actually being aware of the experience rather than knowing myself as the experiencer. So that's all I wanted to share.
Thank you. Does anyone else have anything they'd like to share on this particular quote? Yes, Ron. So I say Ronald, because that's what your thing says.
Yes, it always ends up that way. I don't know why. Let's see. In my contemplation, I said, ask inner guide. Inner guide, speaking to me, continue to find and abide in the solid, never-changing, still point of awareness. But remember, you are attached to a human body in a form of confused consciousness for a reason beyond your understanding. The body and consciousness are tools that have a necessary but also limited specific use. Use them wisely.
Thank you.
So I didn't specifically really address the experiencer beyond the experiencer part, but that's, you know, to me, that's just the awareness observing what the body and or consciousness mind might be in play.
Yeah, thank you. Does anyone else want to share? Well, I'll tell you that two things come to mind for me. One that one that maybe is a little higher than the other. One thing that comes to me, of course, is that when we awaken, as they call it, beyond consciousness, as we're told, you know, when you awaken beyond consciousness, there's not even an experience of a world. So if there's no experience of a world, there's not going to be an experience of a body. So when I say, you know, I am not the experiencer of the body, I'm not the body. It's kind of like saying I'm consciousness, but I'm not the experiencer of the body is saying I'm beyond consciousness. That kind of goes two steps. I am not the body. I am not even the experiencer of the body. It kind of represents the two awakenings. But as I looked at this on a more practical level, something that maybe every one of us can kind of see right now, you know, I've done with you guys that pinch the finger thing, right? Does everybody know what I'm talking about? Where you pinch your finger and you feel the pain. And then you kind of step back and you look at the pain. And when you step back and you look at the pain, you see that you can see that the body is experiencing the pain, but you notice that you aren't. It's like you see the experience, but you aren't the direct experiencer. Well, the way that feels to me is that when I am feeling the pain, I am projecting my attention into the finger. Like if I project my attention all the way into the finger, it feels like I am experiencing the pain. But then when I take that conscious decision to step back, I'm pulling my attention back into awareness. And then I'm noticing that I don't experience the pain. I can see the pain. I can see that the body experiences the pain, but I'm not experiencing the pain. So a practical, kind of a practical application of this is to notice that whenever we feel like the experiencer of something, it's because we're projecting our attention into it. And if we want to see ourselves as the observer rather than the experiencer, we just need to pull our attention back to awareness. So it's something that you can play with, where you might not be able to play with, there is no world, right? Unless you happen to experience samadhi while you're in meditation or something. That's not something you can play with. It's a teaching that you can accept, but you can't play with it. But you can play with noticing that when your attention is projected into the body, you experience the body more directly. And when you pull your attention back to awareness, you really don't experience the body directly. You see the body's experience, but you don't experience it directly. Does anybody have anything to share after I've shared that? It's interesting as I'm talking, because I don't know if you saw me wiping my forehead. I'm kind of hot, and this isn't a hot flash. This is because my mom has a guest here who is a woman in her 80s and very thin. And so she gets cold really easily. So the heat is turned way up above what it's usually at. And so it's hot in here. I mean, I'm sweating. And so it was interesting because as I was talking, I was actually playing with that. I could feel when I projected the attention into the body, I could feel the heat. And when I pull the attention back with awareness, I'm still aware of the body sweating and all of that. But I don't have a direct experience of being hot. Right. All right. So that's just a game you can play with that this quote reminded me of. Let me see what I had next here. Oh, yes, Ron, before I move on, go right ahead.
Yeah, just curious. You know, we don't really have awareness. Is it's nothing that we can really control or direct. The only thing that we have to direct is either a local mind or consciousness to some degree. So aren't we in a way directing our consciousness to focus on awareness?
Yeah. I mean, I was using the word attention, but I think you can also use the word consciousness. Yes. I mean, it does. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not the brilliant person who knows all this stuff. I only know what I observe. And it seems to me that whatever attention is, it is still made up of awareness. But it's almost like a movable piece of it, a movable, focusable piece of it, right? So in that way, it is more limited. You know, because like I can focus, like right now, another thing that we have going on here is the TV is much louder than normal because this woman also can't hear well, right? So I can focus my attention on you and in a way tune out the TV. But if I really pay attention, awareness is always aware of that TV. You know what I mean? Like, because awareness is open. Awareness isn't tuning anything out. But yet there's this other part, which I call attention, where I'm able to focus on you and kind of tune it out. And in fact, that's what we do all the time when we're lost in thought, right? We're taking this more movable, focusable part of awareness, which I call attention, and we're letting it zoom all the way into thought, and then we're lost in thought, and we drive home, and somehow awareness is still working. Awareness knows to stop at the stoplight and turn at the corner. We get home, we don't even know, we don't remember any of it. Because at the same time that awareness was open and functioning perfectly to drive a car, we were so zoomed in on thought that we weren't even aware of awareness functioning as well as it was and the body responding, you know? So it's kind of interesting, this attention thing. It's kind of fun to play with. And yet it's clearly still awareness, right? Because you're aware of whatever you put your attention on, you know? So it's kind of fun. And yeah, if you pull that back onto awareness, pull that movable piece back to the general piece, then you're aware of awareness, right?
Yeah, I just typed, is this kind of like bandwidth control or the narrowing of the bandwidth?
Yeah.
Kind of tuning or something?
Okay. Yeah. Shauna says she practiced this at the dentist today. Yeah. All right, let me see what I have next then. I think it's just a couple quotes down, 951. I kind of wanted to look at it in relation to 949. What matters is that I am neither the body nor the mind. Yeah, what matters is I am neither the body nor the mind. Now, when I read this quote, I thought of the mind, because, you know, mind can be defined in a lot of different ways. When I read this quote, I thought of the mind as thoughts. So I am neither the body nor the thoughts. And again, the way that we have a genuine experience of this, rather than it just being a concept, oh, I am not a body, I am free, I am still as God created me. That's it, right? That's at least for me, when I was a Course student, that was a concept. I mean, I repeated it every 5 minutes or whatever the heck we were supposed to do. You know, I am not a body, I am free, I am still as God created me. But it was a concept, it was not an experience. And so to me, what's really important is that we have the experience that I am neither the body nor the mind. And so the way that we have that experience is, again, by playing with this attention that I'm talking about, right? When we notice, for example, that we're lost in thought, we pull that attention back and we become aware of awareness again, right? And you can even go back and forth if you want to. In fact, one of the games that we played at the retreat was a zoom in, zoom out game. You can play that with thought. You can zoom in, allow yourself to focus on a thought, and then zoom back out, focus on awareness. And play that a few times. Zoom in, allow yourself to focus on a thought, zoom out, focus on awareness. And then notice that you're aware of the zooming in and the zooming out. Right? Whether it's zoomed in, you can see that. When it's zoomed out, you can see that. You're actually aware of the entire zooming process. So playing these kinds of games help us to see I'm not the body. The same thing, like if you're somewhere where it's hot, like I am now, you know, you can kind of zoom in, pay attention to the body and how it's feeling the heat, and then zoom out to general awareness and notice you're not as aware of the body's heat. And then zoom in, and then zoom out, and then zoom in, and then zoom out. And then notice you're aware of both the zoom in and you're aware of the zoom out. Again, all of these kind of games give you the experience that you are not the body. You are not the mind. In fact, you're even aware of the zoom in and zoom out process. You're beyond that. Any comments or sharing before we move on again? All right, then let's see what I had next. Okay, the next one is 952. Compassion and love are my very core. Compassion and love are my very core. I think what I just wanted to share with you is what I came up with as I contemplated these two words, compassion and love, and contemplated what the difference might be between the two. And what I came to is that love, true love, is when there is no individual point of view. You could say in this case, the opposite of love would be selfishness, right? True love is when there is no individual point of view. Nisargadatta often says that consciousness is love. You know, when you're awake to consciousness, when you're awake to unity consciousness, you no longer have that individual point of view. So that is love. Compassion then is from the point of view of love, understanding individual point of views. So if I'm love, I'm not coming from an individual point of view, but maybe I'm talking to you and you are, and you're scared and you're worried about something, right? And love, without an individual point of view, understands the individual point of view, and that's compassion. Does that make sense? It kind of reminds me of something I learned as a Christian, which isn't wholly true, but it's the same concept. You know, this is when you're taught that Jesus is, Jesus at first is the one Son of God, but then somehow he's also God too, right? Right? God became the Son of God, and the rest of us are just peons, but, you know, God became the Son of God, right? Well, one of the things that I learned when I was learning that thought system was that the advantage of God becoming manifest as a person was then he could understand what it's like to be a person, understand the temptations of the flesh better, and that made him a more compassionate God. Of course, that doesn't really explain Revelation very well, but but it's that kind of thing. It's that, you know, even as you awaken to unity consciousness, because you've had a point of view, because you've experienced fear, you've experienced guilt, right? You can have compassion for those who still do. You can have compassion for those who still believe. So love naturally has compassion. Does anybody want to share anything about that particular quote? Compassion and love are my very core. Yes, Ron.
Yeah, I kind of step back a little bit on this one, and what my inner guide said was there are still remaining blocks that do not allow you to express your full compassion and love for yourself. Until these blocks are removed, you will not be in a position to fully sense, feel, or express these innate traits toward others. I will help show you what loving yourself unconditionally looks like.
Yeah, thank you. You remind me of one of my early, early, early visions. I meditated a long time ago for, I don't know how long, a month or so, a very short period of time. This is even before I officially considered myself on a spiritual path, believe it or not. But I meditated, and I used to, in my meditations, have this, in my meditations, it felt like a being would show up in my meditations and begin teaching me things. I think it was my early experience of the Holy Spirit, right? And we always went to this same place in the mountains, and she would use the different things there to teach me things. And one of the things that was in this place where we went was there was this pond. And she asked me one day to take off my shoes and socks and go into the pond. And when I went into the pond had this really thick mud at the bottom, and I began to sink down in this mud, you know, and I made this face like this is disgusting. And what she told me was that the pond represented me. Now, this would be me, the person, not the true self. That the pond represented me, and that what I needed to do was learn to love that pond, love that experience of the mud. And so she had me start noticing the experience of the mud differently. She had me like wiggle my toes, and instead of seeing it as slimy, just notice, you know, which is a judgment thought. Notice the coolness of the mud, notice, you know, this how it felt as the toes wiggled in it. And you know, she just had me spend a lot of time falling in love with that mud that I at first thought was disgusting. And she said that this was very important, that we learn to love the entire self, you know, the one that we often call the false self. But we can't reject this, right? So thank you. Yeah, sometimes people think somehow they can reject this and still awaken to pure love. But how can you awaken to pure love and reject this? Right? If you're pure love, you love everything. And the truth is, when you're really rejecting this, you're being overly identified with it. You know, it kind of reminds me of like when you're a teenager, or I don't know about you guys, I guess I'll talk about me. When I was a teenager, I would totally notice my pimple here, my little bitty pimple, and I'd be paranoid about my pimple all day, but I didn't really notice other people's little bitty pimples, right? How come this pimple was so important? Because I'm identified with this body, right? So when you're hating this, it's because you're identified with this, you see? You disidentify with it through love, through acceptance. Love and acceptance are the same thing. Any comments before we move on? All right, then. I had 9:52 next, and that was 9:52. I had 9:56 next. Laziness and restlessness often stand in the way, and until they are seen and removed, the progress is slow. Now, I actually went somewhere else with this as I began to contemplate this, but I want to show you what happened in my journal. So I'm going to share my journal. It's a little odd, but I have a reason for sharing it with you, so you'll see as we go on. There's a 950 along. Now, again, the mindset, of course, was, this is talking about laziness and restlessness stand in your way. So what I started doing was contemplating what stands in my way of meditation, what stands in my way. And we did this at the fall retreat and created an entire flip chart of things that stood in our way of meditation. And then one by one, we addressed all of those things during the flip chart, during the retreat. But on this day, I was kind of doing the same thing. So this is where this contemplation started. I have a longstanding belief that I am most capable of contemplation and meditation in the morning. In the afternoon, it is more difficult because I get sleepy. In the evening, it is impossible because I get sleepy way too fast. That means my time each day is very limited. And then I began to question this belief. Am I sleepy when I teach in the afternoon or evening? No, not at all. And then I thought, well, when I'm teaching, I'm using my voice. So I thought, so use the voice. Meditate and contemplate with the voice out loud and increase your practice time. My next thought was, what will my mom or Ron think of me? And I'm not talking about the Ron here in the room. I was thinking about my boyfriend, of course. What will my mom or Ron think of me, right? If I'm meditating out loud or contemplating out loud. I also, if I'm just spending time away from them in my room with the door closed, meditating or contemplating. So my next thought was, what will mom or Ron think of me? They expect me to spend time with them. And then the guidance that came was, watch and see how often this is true and how often you are making this up and can excuse yourself. Don't worry that they will hear you. Out loud can be a quiet whisper. Is this fear you're feeling really the fear of mom and Ron, or is there something else you need to look at? So this is just the beginning of where this is going. This is just where this started. It's going to go much deeper, as you'll see. So I started by looking at the beliefs that get in my way. It was that I needed to do it in the morning. I started looking at ways I can maybe do it in the evening. And then what really started happening was a fear started coming up. And I blamed this fear on my family, on what mom would think, on what Ron would think. They expect me to be with them. And now I'm being asked, are you sure that's the problem here? Or is there another fear? So let's go look a little deeper. I have a fear that I need to spend time with my family and so I must limit my spiritual practice when they are around. I would like to look at this fear now and see it clearly for what it genuinely is. So I fear hurting them. I worry that if I selfishly focus on what I want, they will feel abandoned. And I notice a sense of confusion arising in my mind as I look at this, so I know I don't have clarity regarding this part of my life. Can I see what is absolutely honest here? I notice a sense of obligation arising. There is a sense that I have taken or received from them, and so I owe them. This idea, I owe them, is something I've never looked at before. I can feel that it's a strong obstacle, like some other strong obstacles that I've released before. The idea of releasing an idea as strong as this is always feels daunting, because there is a strong sense that I am actually letting go of me. The fear of letting go of me is an enormous fear. An enormous fear can only be met and transcended with enormous willingness, the willingness to actually let go of me. No fear is rational. There is never a good reason to be irrational. Holding on to the idea that I owe them is irrational. Let it go and see what happens. So again, this looking is still building. We're not to the bottom yet. But it's just interesting that when I started really looking at why I don't go into the bedroom and meditate in the evening, it's interesting, I'm in here teaching in the evening. I tell my family, hey, I have to go teach, and I go teach. But I don't tell my family, hey, I have to go meditate, and I go meditate, right? It's really quite interesting. And again, there was this idea, that when I say I have to go teach, that's work to my family, right? That's work. That's my job. They understand I have to go to work. But then if I take additional time and go meditate, I'm being selfish. You know, I owe them my presence. I owe them my presence. And I'm being selfish by taking my presence, going into the bedroom and meditating. Maybe some of you with families understand this a little bit. So, a little deeper. There's more fear here, so let's look again. I worry that if I selfishly focus on what I want, they will feel abandoned. There's another angle to this that has something to do with my friends. It has nothing to do with spiritual practice. It has everything to do with choosing between people. So I began to see this is bigger than just meditation. For years, I've tried to balance my life between friends and family by giving my weekdays to friends and my weekends to family. This has worked somewhat because my family has their own obligations during the week. But there is guilt when a friend asks for time on the weekend and I feel the obligation to be with family. There is that word, obligation, again. And there is a sense that I am selfish if I abandon the family on weekends to be with my friends. What's here that needs to be seen? I don't want an easy out that will make me feel better. I want the truth. What is the obstacle in my mind that needs to be seen? This isn't different. It is the idea that I owe my family. Family is an obligation. And if I don't keep my obligation, I am selfish and I abandon and hurt them. You know, these same themes just keep coming up, coming up. So in the end, this attachment shows up in more than one way. It is an obstacle to spiritual practice. And it is an obstacle to my sense of freedom. It causes a feeling of being trapped and a desire to be free. Do I need to be free? Do I need to get away from my family in order to feel free? No. If I got away from my family, but left these ideas in place in my mind, my friends would become the next obligation. I remember when Jamie was an obligation. Of course, she's dead now, so she's not anymore. But there was a time when she was an obligation. Even a house or a body can be an obligation. I need to let go of the idea of obligation. I need to let go of the idea that I have a will of my own. Only I, who wants to be somewhere else, can feel obligated to be where I am. Oh my God, this is so freeing. That is the answer. Even deeper than letting go of the idea I owe anyone, even deeper than letting go of the idea of obligation, just let go of having a will of my own. If I have no will at all, can I feel obligated? Trapped? No. Now, what this is saying is the reason that I felt selfish and the reason that I felt guilty is because, whether it was going in and meditating, in this case, meditating was being used as a trick. It was I want versus what they want. And the reason I realized that was a trick is because I saw it's the same thing about hanging out with my friends. It's not about meditation. It's not about spiritual practice. It's about me seeing myself in enmity. Is that the right word? Enmity, right? They're enemies with my family. I see them as wanting one thing and me as wanting another thing. So what if I let go of wanting anything? And I just be wherever this body goes. If I move on to 956D. If I let go of having a will of my own, do I let go of spiritual practice? No, because that's not my will. That is the will of the calling. I surrender to the will of the calling, and I surrender to life as it is given me. And I have no will of my own. You know, it's an interesting conundrum. When are we going to meditate because we feel called to meditate? And when are we going to meditate because it's a head thing, right? It's, you know, I quote, want to meditate, my family's keeping me from it. Is that true? You know, is that true, or is this the ego that's somehow distorting the spiritual teaching in order to keep me feeling separate and having a strong will of my own? Surrender to the will of the calling, which means, you know, definitely I'll meditate when that will comes up, but also surrender to life as it is given me. You know, maybe this Regina thing doesn't meditate in the evening, and maybe that's okay. Maybe it's just surrendering to what's happening, surrendering to what's happening, right? Instead of trying to force something that isn't happening. Have no will of my own. There will be difficulty with this to the degree that I am attached to a me, but there won't be confusion if I stick to this simple guideline. Surrender to the calling, surrender to life as it is given to me, have no will of my own. Family will not be an obstacle to the calling if I pay attention to the calling. It knows the way. And family will help me let go of a will of my own. Family can help with that big time, right? Because if there's anybody I'm going to clash with as soon as I start wanting something, it's family, right? It's always those that you're closest to. So as soon as my personal will starts showing up, there's going to be some kind of a conflict with the family. That's a clear sign that my personal will has shown up. Family can help with that big time because family has a will of their own. That's the purpose of family, or we could say close relationships, in a nutshell. So I think what I wanted to show was, you know, this happens from time to time in my journal to show that sometimes, I mean, that wasn't directly contemplating the quote, laziness and restlessness often stand in the way. But as I began to contemplate the quote, I began to be taken into a path of what I needed to look at. And I just allowed that path to go. So sometimes when we contemplate, it's not a strict contemplation, right? It's a freer contemplation so that any obstacles or any clarity that we need to see can be revealed. So we just need to be kind of loose and not strict. In fact, NTI would never have been written if I had been trying to stick to a strict contemplation. I had to kind of let NTI dance off into whatever it wanted to talk about while I was reading a particular scripture. And it's kind of funny because not anymore, but in the old days when NTI first came out, some people would criticize it and they'd say, well, what you wrote here has nothing to do with this scripture. Right? Well, that's because this was a free contemplation where I was letting inner wisdom go where it wanted to go so that I could learn what I needed to learn from inner wisdom. So I'm just going to pause for a moment and see if anybody has anything they want to say. Right, I guess not. So we will go on to the next thing. And that was 9:56. So the next thing is 9:57. I lost you guys. Where are you? There you are. Okay, so 9:57. Integrity will take you to reality. Integrity will take you to reality. Okay, I'm going to share from my journal a little bit again. We're going to go look at 9:57, but we're only going to look at 9:57B. So I'll just go right past A. So basically, this is a tip. I put one of the tips in from Gentle Healing Year One. This is from a tip that I wrote for Gentle Healing Year One. It applies to integrity will take you to reality. Integrity can be defined as honesty, which is very important on this path. But it is also defined as the state of being whole and undivided. Integrity is being fully in harmony with the self. So let's look at this tip. This is a tip from ACIM Lesson 170, My Salvation Comes From Me. When today's lesson says, my salvation comes from me, it means the same thing that Jesus meant when he said, the kingdom of God is within you. However, there is a lot more within you than the little self. My salvation comes from me does not mean that the little self saves itself. It cannot. Nor does it mean that absolutely nothing is required of the little self. It may be helpful to look at it this way. There is no clear dividing line between the little self and truth. The little self's mental chatter is like the foam on a wave. The personal sense of self is like a wave. Internal wisdom is like the part of the ocean that can be reached by the light of the sun, and the source is like the depth of the ocean that is beyond the sun's reach. Although on the one hand, there are degrees of difference between these aspects of ocean, they are all ocean, right? The foam on the top of the wave is ocean. The wave is ocean. The more narrow depths are ocean, and the deeper depths are all ocean. In this figurative example, you are the ocean. If you are the ocean, then you are the mental chatter. You are the individual sense of self. You are the internal wisdom. And you are the source. So when we say that your salvation comes from you, all these parts of you can participate in your salvation. the part of the mind that engages in mental chatter, can contemplate the workbook lesson or the seven steps to awakening. It can practice inquiry instead of chattering meaninglessly. The sense of self can rest in awareness instead of resting in mental chatter. Inner wisdom can provide guidance or insight, and the source can awaken us entirely. As you see, my salvation comes from me, but it doesn't come from one part of me in a vacuum. All parts of me cooperate in salvation. From the perspective of the little self, I have a part in my awakening, and God, or grace, has a part in my awakening too. So as yesterday's lesson emphasized, I do my part and trust that God, or the deeper parts of the ocean, will do its part. So the reason I wanted to share this is because, again, this particular quote, 957, says integrity will take you to reality. So I wanted to show that integrity is kind of using all parts of yourself, right, towards one purpose. Right? It's bringing all parts of yourself into harmony under one purpose and letting it all work together. Integrity will take you to reality. Any comments on that particular quote? All right, then I guess I'll see
Regina.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, I was just going to share what I received.
Sure.
Okay. When all self-identifications are stripped away with integrity, the very nature of the self is revealed. Independence of mind and body, the self is love. It knows only love. It needs not to prove itself. It is being awareness bliss. It has no boundaries and it is limitless. It allows all things to be, yet we are told to be integrity, to live purely. Look upon all things with love and cause no harm. I am to see that all things of being are independent of mind and body. What has been coming up for the past week or two is that all things are made new. These are new beginnings. Allow all things to be made new. The self is independent of the mind and the body. It is not governed by this world with all the craziness and insanity. That in itself brings me peace. It is the thinking mind and doing body that tends to lack integrity and cause pain. Rise above this and live in the reality of self with integrity and love to reach the highest level of awareness of being. Be love and know only love. So that was my sharing.
Thank you. I love the way that ended. Be love and know only love. Thank you. Anyone else want to share?
I'll share my contemplation.
Thank you.
It's integrity will take you to reality. The definition of integrity from the dictionary is honesty, uprightness, and unity. One must be completely honest and transparent to oneself. Otherwise, truth will not be found in the layers and layers of this pseudo-reality. Every upset and slight annoyance is a defense against the truth. Do what you can to see who or what believes these stories. Do what you can to see who or what observes the experience. Make peace with this pseudo-reality by surrendering the pseudo-self. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, it's 7:26. Let's see if we have one more little thing here to look at. Oh, we actually only have one more, so that's pretty cool. So 970 is what I have next. 970. You are pure being, awareness, bliss. Let's look and see what I had in the journal, because that's what my note says to do. Um, The mind is clearly the obstacle to truth realization. The mind cannot imagine truth realization. It cannot imagine that you are more than the person it thinks you are. It defines you, and it believes its definition. However, what kind of authority is the mind? It chatters incessantly, so you can discern whether it is a reliable authority or not. Does its chatter indicate that it is reliable or highly unreliable? Yes, the mind has proven itself over and over again to be highly unreliable. Therefore, why trust its definition of you? It may tell you what you are, but is there any reason to believe what it says? So I think that's probably a pretty good point to end on, right? I mean, just if the mind is not reliable and it has proven itself to be unreliable over and over and over again, why do we believe who it, you know, what it says about us, right? So that's it. I will see you guys next week. And Ron, I think I'll see you in person because he's coming for the retreat. And Shauna will be at the retreat as well. It's going to be a good retreat. I'm only halfway done writing it, but I can tell you the first half that has come, it's going to be a good retreat. I'm looking forward to seeing what the last half would be. I should know that by the time you get here, I think. So I'll see you guys next week, and bring NTI if you have NTI, because we will be using it. Okay. Bye, everyone.